to the Curators of Horror.
We're your curators.
That's Katie.
That's Emrys, and here at the Curators of Horror, we believe that there is a perfect horror movie out there for everyone.
So whether you're a lover or a hater or somewhere in between, we want to help you reconnect or discover some wonderful gems from the horror genre.
Each episode, we convince an unsuspecting victim to join us on the podcast.
Each of us picks the perfect horror movie for our guest, and then we strap them to a sofa, make them watch the movies, and then talk about it afterwards.
We're in competition, so each episode, our guest will pick which film was their favourite and which one scared them the most.
Episode 20!
Wow!
We got to number 20!
That's exciting, isn't it?
It kind of feels like we should have done more by now.
I feel like it's been so much longer than it actually is. Oh my god, it's like our marriage, isn't it?
But I guess like we do. Okay. How long have we been married now? 5 years?
It will be 6 years.
6 years coming up, yeah.
We're in year like five. Is that how it works? Yeah.
No.
No, we're in year six. What? No. How does it work? Yeah, because...
Thanks for joining us on the Curators of Not Maths.
Because when you're with someone, you're like in year one.
Yeah.
And then you're in year two. So technically, we're in year six. We're in the sixth year of being together. Are we not?
If you say so, then I believe you.
I think that's how it works.
Okay.
Because like, yeah, because you don't know each other.
Yeah.
And then between that and your first anniversary, you're within your first year of knowing each other.
Sure.
So we're within our sixth year.
We just haven't completed it.
We haven't leveled up to 6 years of marriage yet.
Okay.
So yeah, I think I was right.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know why that we needed to be talking about that on the podcast. But,
no, I mean, definitely not for as long as we just did.
Yeah, that was really unnecessary.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Just okay, that's all I'm getting.
I'm going with okay.
Okay. I am also okay.
Ah, okay. Yes, being okay. No, it's I'm all right. I did want to talk about a podcast I've been listening to.
Oh, yeah.
I know that we talked about in a few episodes ago, the Boulay Brothers' Dragula.
Oh, yes.
Which I still absolutely adore. I would recommend the third season above the first and the second season, not
yes.
because they're terrible, but just because they have truly found their stride by the time they get to season three.
Agreed.
So we absolutely loved watching it. But the incredible Boulay brothers have actually started a podcast called Creatures of the Night.
Mm.
And it's just everything that I want in a podcast. They kind of talk about themselves. They're quite elusive, I've found out since watching the TV show. They are not brothers. They are, in fact, a couple. They've been together for something like 20 odd years, but they never appear in public out of drag. So when they are being the Boulay brothers, they are in full drag and everything. They never make public appearances out of drag. So they are a little bit, you know, mysterious, which is really, really cool. So they answer a few questions about themselves, but they also talk about horror movies that are coming out. So obviously I'm very, very into that. They talk about hauntings of things. They have some amazing guests on the podcast. Dieter Von Teese was on it.
Mm.
And I'm a big Dieter Von Teese fan. So that was really, really interesting having them talk to her. And in general, it's just really, really great. If you're a fan of the show, I'd recommend the podcast. And I think if you get into one or the other, you'll enjoy both. So that has been making my days more than okay.
Oh,
so
good.
Yeah, I'm enjoying that a lot.
I agree. I have been listening to this also. In fact, I think I'm the one that introduced you to it. But I've really, really been enjoying it as well. And it has been filling a horror hole that's been in my life.
Been filling your hole.
Yes, that is what I said. Yeah. I put some other words in between so it wouldn't sound like that, but thank you for identifying that.
That is basically what you just said on the podcast.
Yes, it is.
Enjoy.
Yeah, I won't edit that out either. And we're still going with The Walking Dead.
Yes.
We're in season five now.
We've kind of reached the pain threshold with Walking Dead, though, I think.
I think
we're at the point where things are starting to get a bit shit.
Yeah.
It's definitely not as bad as when I was watching it before. I think I'm giving it slightly more time and I'm forgiving it slightly more for the issues that it has. But yeah, it's definitely starting to get to that point where I was like, oh yes, I remember why I stopped watching this show all those years ago. But funnily enough, talking about how long we've been married for, we just watched the episode that you and I watched on the first night of our honeymoon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When we were in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And we got a Domino's pizza and we watched that episode. And then amazingly and coincidentally, we had a Domino's pizza the other day. Not hashtag not sponsored by Domino's pizzas. Although, you know, if you're listening, we'll make space. And then we just happened to have one again when we were watching that episode for the second time. It was crazy.
Yeah, it was very strange, but very nice. And the pizza was nice as well. I enjoyed that pizza. The best thing about that story, though, that anecdote, is that it was the first night of our honeymoon and we did have this amazing restaurant reservation. We had got married the day before, we'd got the train to Edinburgh and we were both completely knackered. And about halfway through the journey, we both just looked at each other and went, shall we sack off the restaurant and just get a Domino's pizza and watch The Walking Dead? And that's what we did. And that's why we are married still, because we're on a level when it comes to things like that.
Well, I think it's about time that we introduced our guest.
Yes.
That's nattering on.
Yes.
So we are very excited to have with us the lovely Lottie. Hey, Lottie.
Hello. Hi.
How are you doing? How have you found this crazy time that we're currently living in? And how are you right now?
I'm so bored. I was so happy to be made to watch some films because I've reached that point where, you know, I've thought about writing the great novel. I've done all the crafts. The garden is looking like it could be entered into the Chelsea Flower Show. And now I'm so bored. I actually sorted out all my socks yesterday. That is what I did with myself. So yeah, I need to get out now. It needs to be over.
If you want to borrow a small child for a period of time, then I'm sure we could arrange that.
I'd borrow a small dog, but you can probably keep the small child, guys.
Yeah, I was going to say, you'd have to borrow the small child and then maintain a 2 meter distance from her at all times. So that might be difficult. Whilst I'm pretty sure where it comes to dogs, I don't think you have to socially distance with dogs.
I don't think so.
It'd be really sad if we did.
Yeah.
You know when they do that thing on TV where they get like the person on the street to ask Boris Johnson a question? I want to see them ask that question.
Yeah.
Do I have to be distanced from dogs? And dogs, the dogs have to be distanced from each other.
Yeah. If they're from a different household.
If it's a Friday and they're from a different household and their name is Bob, can I play with that dog? Who knows?
Yeah. Who knows?
But let's get straight into the subject at hand, which is indeed horror movies. So, Lottie, tell us a little bit about your relationship with horror movies.
I'm very much hidden behind the sofa a lot. Anything remotely scary. I have a really low threshold for gore and I am very, very jumpy and I'm always watching between my fingers or I'm hiding behind a cushion, I'm hiding behind the sofa. But weirdly, I really love gothic fiction. I really love scary books, quite happy to be scared in a book, but yeah, terrified of scary films.
I think there is a real difference between reading something scary in a book and seeing something scary in a film, though. I don't know what it is because I'm the same. For the longest time, I really, really loved scary fiction, in particular gothic horror, but I couldn't bear watching things on screen. It was like seeing all the blood and guts and everything. There are a lot of books that are very, very violent that I had read when I was younger, but you don't kind of feel it as much as you do when you see it all kind of laid out for you on screen, which is weird because it should be more scary reading something, because I always think what you make up in your head is a lot worse than anything that you see on screen. It's a very different experience, isn't it?
I think it's about being in control a little bit as well. I can always control my imagination. I control the speed at which I'm reading. I can kind of just, all right, I know this bit's going to be scary. I can read it in a bit of a rush or I'll kind of understand where the plot is going. So I think, I don't think this is what we think it is. You know, I can sense there's something else going on here. Whereas with a film, the director is so in control of how you're feeling and what you're seeing, and you get that real shock jump factor. I love it and hate it, but mostly hate it.
We don't usually talk about this, but you work in quite a spooky set of places.
Yeah, it can be a problem because I do like to read scary books, and I read one recently called The Silent Companions, which was all about these sort of strange painted figures they would have had in the 1700s that looked like people and were designed to kind of make you jump. It was sort of this country house joke that people would play posing them around. And then I went into work in a big scary spooky old palace, and we have quite a lot of kind of mannequins, and we did actually have at this time like a spooky painted person on a board.
Oh,
and
God.
I was just absolutely terrified.
Oh,
I just kept jumping for about 2 weeks.
Do they have ghosts and things at the buildings that you've worked? Do they have like stories of ghosts that are there? They're like, oh yes, the lady in the blue dress who plays the piano at midnight or something like that.
So one of the places I work at is a place called Hampton Court Palace, and there's a lot of people that hear footsteps, and there's a very particular sound of a shoe that's like a wooden heel. And we've got a haunted gallery that is supposedly very, very haunted. Everyone's kind of got their own stories, but then I talk to some of the warding staff who would just say there's nothing. But there was one warder who, when she was locking up the palace one night, had just checked an entire room, turned all the lights out, and as she went to close the door, someone tapped her on the shoulder, and she just ran, aww, locked the door from the outside and went to tell the security team just in case it was a person. But she just checked that whole room. There was no one there.
That is amazing. I love things like that.
So we haven't had too many people in a while that are not big fans of horror. So I was wondering if you wanted to tell us just a bit more about what you don't like what you find difficult.
I don't know whether it's just I don't necessarily understand the genre as a whole. Like, there might be bits of it that I do like, but I don't necessarily understand completely what the genre covers and what it means. But I think I don't enjoy being scared. I really like something that's very narrative driven by people, and I'm very interested in people's lives. I'm very interested in social history, and I watch a lot of historical stuff, a lot of stuff where it's really just about characters going on a journey. It's not kind of action-packed. I don't necessarily need like this really big action-packed plot to keep me going. I'm quite happy with something that's a bit more observational, or just about someone going on a bit of a journey emotionally or in their life. So I think I've assumed that horror is not that, and whether I'm right or wrong, you know, that's kind of the assumption that I've made.
Well, listeners, we're about to find out probably quite soon. So are there any kind of standout memories that you have of horror films that you have seen that you maybe didn't enjoy? What can you remember?
I feel like there was a sort of period of sort of sleepovers, and when you first get to university, where everyone's like, oh, let's watch a scary film, oh, that'd be great, we'll all love that. We won't all love that, because some of us do not like being scared. And also my university, like, our halls was a big ridiculous Victorian castle with lots of turrets and lots of spooky, like, the corridors genuinely look like the corridors in The Shining.
Oh my god. No.
And we thought, what a great idea, we'll watch The Shining. I still haven't seen the end of that film because I was too scared, and I was then too scared to get back to my room in our halls because the corridors were literally the corridors in The Shining.
I can't go down there. There might be loads of like rivers of blood coming out.
I can't stay here because the film is still happening. I can't go to bed because I live in the film. It's awful. So things like that. And also, I remember my first scary film movie is probably the Muppets Christmas Carol with the door knocker. Do you remember this? The scary face of the door knocker.
Screaming because
as a child,
he screams. It's terrifying. The music as well. The music's really scary.
There's a big build up to that. This is the level we're dealing with, people. The door knocker of the Muppets scarred me for life as a child. So this is where I'm coming from here.
Oh, it's amazing. So let's get into the films that we have curated for you. So the first movie that we have curated for you, Lottie, is Sleepy Hollow.
Constable Ichabod Crane, sent from New York to investigate murder in Sleepy Hollow.
How much have your superiors explained to you?
Only that the three were slain in open ground, their heads severed from their bodies.
Taken by the headless horseman, taken back to hell. He rode a giant black steed. To look at him made your blood run cold. Even today, the Western Woods is a haunted place where brave men will not venture.
We have murders in New York without benefit of ghouls and goblins.
You're a long way from New York, Constable.
Is everyone in this village enthralled to superstition?
We have many things to talk about, even in this backward place.
Excuse my manner. I'm not used to.
Female company?
Murder! The Orphan's killed again!
The assassin is a man of flesh and blood, and I will discover him.
Are you so certain of everything?
Perhaps there's a bit of a witch in you, Katrina.
Why do you say that?
Because you've bewitched me.
And the second movie that we have curated for you is Marrowbone.
We have come very far, enduring many hardships. But at last, we found the place where we can be safe.
These Marrowbone kids, how well do you know them?
It's just that they worry me, always hiding away from the community.
They're not hiding. They live too far away.
Get close together, come on.
What are we going to do?
I don't know, but if the truth comes out, they will separate us.
Good luck, Mr. Marrowbone.
Sam has been to Mother's, right? He says he saw something in there.
You have no idea what you are getting into.
We have to tell Annie the truth.
No one ever will separate us.
So, we've heard the trailers. Now, Lottie, we would love to know, which one of us do you think chose which one of those films for you?
Oh, gosh. I kind of gone back and forth and back and forth on this, just pondering who it might have been. I think Katie chose Sleepy Hollow and Emrys chose Marrowbone.
And why do you think that?
I don't know. I think just because Sleepy Hollow is really beautiful and really well designed, and it's the world of Tim Burton, and I don't know, I just kind of thought Katie might have gone for that, and the other one's quite obscure and I'd never heard of it. I don't know whether I just think Emrys will come up with something, that you'll come up with something that's, yeah, obscure and I've never heard of it.
You are correct.
Hey, you're the first person in ages who's
everyone's
got that wrong.
Got that wrong, really? for weeks. Yeah,
I do think you're at a slight advantage though, considering that you do know both of us.
Yeah,
most people come on and they're like, I bet Katie picked this film because it's like nicer and the other one's really horrendous, and I'm always like, no, I will always be the one that picks the film that's more horrendous.
Yep.
but yeah, that's really good, well done.
Go me.
Right, so before we get into the discussion of these two movies, sing us a spoilery warning, wife of mine.
Sing you a spoilery warning?
Well, you did that a couple of times ago, and
spoilers.
I really enjoyed that.
Don't listen if you don't want spoilers, because there's so many spoilers that are going to be coming. And to be perfectly honest, if you haven't seen these films already, you should have, because they're both really good. But yeah, we're going to be doing spoilers. Did you enjoy?
That was lovely.
Okay.
Thank you. So the first movie that we're going to discuss is Sleepy Hollow. So Katie, tell us a little bit about Sleepy Hollow.
Sleepy Hollow came out in 1999. Do you remember 1999? A year so full of hope and, you know, before the millennium and all that. Remember that?
That was a really good year for films. Someone wrote a book about all of the films that came out that year.
Yeah, well, this was one of them.
Sure.
I'm not going to say whether or not it was a great film or not, but it was one of them. Came out in 1999 and was directed by Tim Burton. And it was written by Andrew Kevin Walker. And it stars a pretty amazing cast now, actually. If you look at it now, you kind of go, oh my God, there's so many like big name actors in this, which I don't think I realized at all when I first saw this film. But starring Johnny Depp, Christina Ricci, Miranda Richardson, Michael Gambon, Jeffrey Jones, Richard Griffith. It just goes on and on and on. A little synopsis of Sleepy Hollow. Ichabod Crane is sent to Sleepy Hollow to investigate the decapitations of three people, with the culprit being the legendary apparition, the Headless Horseman. Mwah. And frivolity ensues, basically. So tell us, Lottie, what did you think of Sleepy Hollow?
Can I tell you whether or not I've seen it before?
Yes, you
absolutely
can.
Absolutely.
I have seen this film many times.
Oh.
I think if you were a teenager in the early noughties, how have you not seen this film?
Sleepy Hollow, yes.
Yes, I really enjoyed seeing it again. It was quite a walk down memory lane, but I did feel that because I knew, I kind of was preempting things coming up, so it was a very different watch to perhaps another film because I had seen it before. And I had the stuff I'd assumed about this film that on watching it this time round, suddenly realised we're entirely wrong. I thought we were in sort of mid to late Victorian times, and actually we're in the 1700s, and we first sort of see Ichabod Crane in New York, and it did look, like the production design and everything was giving me some serious Victorian vibes in the way they'd kind of created that. And I think that was just so you feel a bit more when you go to Sleepy Hollow that they're really in this backwater, and it's all very kind of primitive, and all these ghost stories bubbling up from the townsfolk. And yes, so I had a great time. I had a great time watching this. And one of my notes is just, everyone is in this. Oh my goodness, it's Richard Griffiths.
I know, it's such a treat when you have that scene of all of the kind of older members of Sleepy Hollow in one room, and you literally just go, what? Like they're all in one room. Like you just wish that you could have been on set with all of those actors at once. And Miranda Richardson is in this film.
Oh my goodness, what a babe.
Miranda Richardson, and oh my goodness, Miranda Richardson's heaving bosom in this film is just, I mean, it's worth watching this film for that alone. She's absolutely stunning and breathtaking, and it's just, it's wonderful.
She's amazing, but I felt bad that she didn't have that much to do until the very end of the film. She's just sort of there, and you think, well, of course you're going to be important because you're Miranda Richardson. You're not going to be there as just a background artiste that just wanders in every now and again to talk to your stepdaughter and then randomly go and shag someone in the woods for no real very tenuous plot-based reason.
She is suspiciously absent from quite a lot of this film, I think. You're like, I wonder who could be behind this. Maybe it's this big-name actress who doesn't really appear in this film very much at all.
I'm sorry, if we're going to be talking about like a big-name performer who's not really used properly in this film, can we talk about Christopher Walken in this film?
With his sharp teeth.
Oh my God, Christopher Walken in this film. Do you know what? I hadn't seen Christopher Walken in anything before I saw this film, because I again watched this film relatively like kind of teenage years ish. I think I was maybe 16 or 17 when I first watched this film, and I didn't know Christopher Walken. I didn't have any referential point for him other than being the Headless Horseman in Sleepy Hollow. And the ridiculous thing about it is that he really is hardly in the film at all, because the majority of the time you've got a headless horseman who's obviously played by a stunt double.
Obviously headless.
Is the actor who played Darth Maul, is that right?
Yes, Ray Park.
Yeah, when he's headless. So he literally is kind of in the flashback scene of look at the headless horseman before he was headless. And then at the end, when he gets his head put back on, that's it. I mean, the only thing that I can think of is they cast him specifically for his hair. You know?
His hair is, I've written, looking rather noughties indie band about his hair.
Oh, yeah.
He's looking a bit kind of,
he looks like the lead singer from Green Day.
Yes, that's it. That's what I was thinking of, definitely. But
that is what the hairstyle is for almost every male character in this film. For some reason, a lot of them had mullets. I was like, what's going on with this, like, you know, party in the back situation going? It's very, very funny because a lot of the costumes, yes, they're very like stylized Tim Burton style costumes. I do think that the design of this film is basically as good as Tim Burton gets. Like, it's like peak Tim Burton design. Mm. And then I feel like it starts to decline somewhat as the films that come after this. Just my personal opinion. The men's hair is really, really funny. Watching it back, it's the thing that you go, that doesn't really feel genuine, even in a kind of, you know, distorted Tim Burton universe version of this time.
It's brilliant. I mean, it was a time of a lot of sea salt hairspray and gel and just, oh, they've really gone for it. It is very, and I always find that really funny with historical films, it's always the era making it doing that era. So yes, in the sort of Colin Firth Pride and Prejudice, it's like 90s doing Regency.
Oh,
so, and this
it.
Is very much yeah. like 1999 to 1799. Like, you yes. can see all of those little things, like the hair and the mullets, and of course very big in 1799, the mullet. No.
Oh god.
But it is beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. And that first shot when we come into the village of Sleepy Hollow and all these kind of Dutch style houses.
Oh god, yeah.
Are just, like, visually just absolutely stunning. You feel you could really walk around Sleepy Hollow and it's this complete world and you get a sense of really where everything is. Yeah, just beautiful.
I think people were overwhelmed by this is one of those films that you literally, you could see everything. It's all there. You can walk around. You can walk around Sleepy Hollow in this. It's all the facades are there. The streets are there. They have these amazing long shots of them kind of driving the carriage around all of this area. And it's so amazing to see. And I think that that's why it has held up even now, even this amount of time that's gone by, is that there's not an excessive use of CGI in this film. Obviously, there is some CGI and it kind of sticks out like a sore thumb now because, you know, things have developed so much. But because it's kind of done just sparingly, it doesn't detract from the overall feel of the film, I don't think.
Mm, definitely. The only one thing that I wrote a note about is just, I think just because it's so beautifully crafted, so much of, you've got this incredible bag that Ichabod Crane, Johnny Depp's character, opens up, his sort of doctor's bag or detective's bag, and all these incredible things come out of it and all these beautiful moments. And then there's one moment with Ichabod and Christina Ricci's character, I can't remember her character name, where they're looking at this bird and it's the worst it's the worst prop you've ever seen. And I just got the impression that some poor stagehand or like someone just got told, oh, just you made the bird. And they were like, what bird? Well, they need it in 5 minutes on set. You've got to make this bird. Or some work experience person just had to make this bird. It made me really angry.
It's the red cardinal, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I thought that when I watched this film, I was like, Jesus, that's a sad looking bird in that shot. It really just looks it looks like something that's been on a ride in Disney World for about 30 years and no one's ever got to it with a vacuum cleaner. It looks really, really sad. But I read something about this bird whilst I was reading up around the film, and apparently a lot of the filming that they did was in the UK, and the red cardinal, that's this particular bird, I believe it's the red cardinal, there was only like one left in the whole of the UK because it was so rare. So they were like, you're not allowed to use it in a film because it's such a rare bird that you're not allowed it. So they had to kind of go, oh crap, we've got to, like, I mean, that doesn't excuse the fact that it is awful, but I think perhaps he was like, yeah, we can get it, it's fine, I'm Tim Burton. But apparently he's on record saying that they then had to use this horrendous fake bird, and he's kind of in love with the fact that that bird was so bad. He kind of loves it. And I was like, that's a very weird reason to have such a shocking special effect in what is otherwise a really, really great film. But I do kind of love the fact that the reason that they had to use a fake one in the first place is that they were like, no man, you cannot use our birds. And he was just like, well fine, if I can't have a real one, I'm just gonna have a really shit one instead.
I don't think this film is a particularly scary film. Although there is one scene in it that I did find, like, if there was one bit that put me on edge a little bit, and it's when he comes, when the horseman comes to get the family.
Oh, God.
When it's the mum and the dad, and the mum, like, hides the little boy under the floor, and he gets them all.
Yeah, he gets all of them, including the little boy. It's that shot of the little boy under the floorboards when his mum's head comes off.
Oh, it's so brutal. So horrible.
It's another thing that I love about this film is that it was inspired by a lot of kind of Hammer horror, which is one of the reasons that they wanted the incredible Christopher Lee in this film. He's literally in it for like 2 minutes or something before the credits have even rolled. And they're like, Christopher Lee, because they wanted to add the gravitas that Christopher Lee brought to all of the Hammer horror films when those came out. And Tim Burton basically said that he hated the fact that when you watch horror films as a child, that you see children in horror films, but they're always spared. There's always like this rule around children in horror that bad things don't happen to them unless you're kind of going back to original Frankenstein when you get a little girl getting chucked in the river and drowning and things like that.
Though that was cut out.
Yeah. So. But yeah, there's this kind of rule that you can't do bad things to children in horror films and they are in some way immune. And he found it very frustrating as a child to be watching these films and be like, well, that doesn't make sense. So he was determined that in this film that was kind of recreating that style of films that he watched when he was a child, that they were going to, you know, bump off the children as well as the adults.
Yeah, even having seen it quite a few times, it was that bit, like you say, when he looks up and he sees his mother's eyes looking down at him through the floorboards. Oh, it's so awful. And the other bit that really got me was the notary jumping out of a cupboard. He's just hidden himself. And like, where's he gone? Where's the notary? And I just, because I could remember the big scares, I could remember what the big sort of jumps and big scary bits were, but I didn't remember that. And that was my biggest jump, I think, in the whole film, was this man in a cupboard.
Yeah. The fact that you say that it was, you know, inspired by Hammer horror makes a lot of sense with the amount of blood and gore that is in this film and how and the color that they've specifically chosen for it. It's very Kensington gore.
It's just fabulous, the blood and guts in this, because it's so not real. It's kind of impossible to be grossed out by that color of blood, because anyone who's seen blood in their life knows that blood is not that color, and it's so stylized. This film was basically my gateway drug into horror. I loved this film when I was younger. I've told Emrys this story before, but at my school, they had in our library, which was really quite small, a film section that was basically like one shelf on a bookshelf, you know, because it was like, who's going to have like film books? But I was obsessed with film and theatre. So I read almost every book on that shelf. And one of the books that they had at my all girls, Catholic girls school was The Art of Sleepy Hollow, which was just incredible. It was the entire script of Sleepy Hollow with pictures as to how they made everything, how they did the special effects, and it was very gory. And I think I first took this book out of the library when I was about 11 years old, and I was like, oh my god, this is the scariest thing I've ever had. And there were certain pages that I couldn't look at because they were too scary, but I was just obsessed with it. And I think that's one of the reasons why I am so into very stylized gothic horror, is because of that book and that film. But funny what you were saying about the color of the blood in this film is that on set, the majority of the time they had to use blood that was bright orange, because the entire film almost is shot through a blue lens in order to give it that black and white look that it has. So the blood, can you imagine doing all of these scenes with, you know, like Ichabod Crane cutting open a body and all the blood's just coming out on his face, and it's not even that color, it's just like tangerine or like
spray tan.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically Johnny Depp got tangoed.
Yeah.
Or it's like he like threw like Nickelodeon gack on his face or something like that.
Exactly. Which I just think it must have been such a surreal experience, some of the moments of shooting this film, because you'd be like, how is this going to work? How is this going to work? And you just have to trust that eventually it will all come together.
I'm not the biggest fan of sort of Tim Burton when he reaches a certain point. And I think this is really, this is on the cusp where it really feels like he's being self-referential, which is a really bad sign. Like, one of the first things that you see when you see the horseman, like, you know, chasing someone down is Jack Skellington. He's just like, it's like just
the
pumpkin head skeleton. And it's like, oh, okay. Like, that's from that other film you did. And I just, I think that this film is, in a design way, is absolutely beautiful. Like, and Tim Burton's films always are. They always look amazing. But I don't know if it is greater than the sum of its parts, especially the story. You know, I remember this film really vividly. I've seen it before quite a few times as well. But I couldn't for the life of me remember what actually was going on.
Me either.
And it's almost like it doesn't matter. Like, you're just like, oh, this just looks so great. And like, oh, look, that's scary. Oh, there's blood. But really, you've got this weird story that's kind of about like land and money and revenge,
and
which is just
families
so
marrying families
disconnected
and,
to what you're seeing.
It's really bizarre, isn't it? Because I was exactly the same. When we started watching it, I was like, I don't remember this at all. Like, the bits that I remember are the more fantastical parts of it. So
it's like
I remembered
the set pieces.
Everything about the Headless Horseman, absolutely everything, because that whole thing fascinated me. I remembered everything about Ichabod's mother and all of those scenes with her, you know, all of those incredible scenes where the camera is spinning round as she's like spinning and how she dies and how when I first saw that, that was just, that seemed like the most horrific thing that I'd ever seen in my life. But I didn't really remember the story at all. And one of the things that was most difficult to watch was like these, in inverted commas, love scenes between Johnny Depp and Christina Ricci, which must be some of the most stilted romance scenes that I've ever seen in anything. And what's ridiculous is that I remember watching this film and being completely enamored of Johnny Depp as Ichabod Crane. And watching it back now, I'm just like, what a knob, seriously.
I kind of loved it, though. I kind of thought it was absolutely excellent because I just thought Johnny Depp was the ultimate gothic hero. He really reminded me of like a Jonathan Harker. He was passing out at every available opportunity, terrible with women. There was a brilliant bit at the end where the horseman's there and it's come to this great crescendo and this denouement where he just stands behind her and just puts the beautiful maiden in front of him. He sends a child in first to see this scary witch. Like, I just thought his really awful flirting was kind of brilliant, but I think I just took it as kind of part of the comedy of the film, because there's a lot of comedy. There's some real gags, and I mean, not least Richard Griffith's head spinning all the way around, which I really remembered. And when it happened again, I was like, oh yes, I remember this bit. That's just so brilliant. But I kind of took it as part of the, part of the major lols that you get through this film. There's real tongue-in-cheek stuff going on.
My favorite line that Johnny Depp says is one of the, he's arrived at Sleepy Hollow, and I think it's like the first time that someone's died, and he just says, "It's all right, I'm here now." And they're all like, "Great, I feel so much better."
No, there is a moment where he's just seen the horseman for the first time, and he knows that it's real, and he just sits there and he goes, "Horseman. Headless." And literally it's funny what you were saying, Lottie, about them, you know, portraying Sleepy Hollow as being this real hick town, like, you know, in the middle of nowhere. Oh, they're so stupid. Look at me, I'm this clever, well-educated doctor / detective from New York. And when he finds out that the Headless Horseman is real, he completely loses it. And everyone is just standing around going, can you please get your shit together? Because we've been telling you that this is the thing since the moment you came. And now you've decided that you're gonna have a fit. Like, it's ridiculous. They're all just like, come on, we need you to get this, get it together. And they're so much more chill about it than he is.
Very quickly goes from being I'm a resolute man of science to witches are real, the other realm is real, this is clearly a tree that is a portal to another realm.
That's the thing when he goes, the tree is a door to the, and it's like,
this has this realization.
You suddenly know so much about all of this stuff. Like, you're like the expert in this now, are you? Thanks for mansplaining this tree portal to us, guy who got here 5 minutes ago and didn't even know that the Headless Horseman was real.
And he is surrounded by witches. I think every woman in this is a witch.
Yeah, from basically.
Even the midwife is up to something with herbs, and it's all looking, she's got a lantern with a witch on it, and it's all, you know, his mother was a witch. We've got Christina Ricci, she's up to some magical drawings and protection spells. And then obviously the stepmother, the evil stepmother, Miranda Richardson. So it's, yeah, I found that quite interesting that they're all up to magic. It's all going on around him.
I must admit, the most racy moment of this film that I remember from when I was watching this as a young, impressionable teenager has nothing to do with Johnny Depp or Christina Ricci. It's the moment at the end where the Headless Horseman has basically decided that he's going to take Miranda Richardson back to hell with him. And he kisses her with his jagged pointy teeth of death, and just blood is just running all out of her mouth and down onto her heaving bosoms. And I mean,
that's very Hammer horror.
Oh my god, I remember watching this and being like, is this allowed? Are people allowed to do this? And it was just, it's so ridiculously over the top, and like, oh my god, it's kind of unnecessary as well, because it's like, what, she's been hanging onto his head and making him do all of this stuff, and now he's like, you're the woman for me.
Yeah, it's nothing I like more than a woman who steals my head and makes me do a lot of murders.
I mean, to be perfectly honest, maybe he just likes a strong woman, which is, you know, quite progressive for that time. So he's like, yeah, I like a woman who knows what she wants, come back to hell with me.
And it's that gothic, you know, it's the gothic thing, you know, it's interesting. They're all a witch, but you still got the kind of angel whore thing going on that you get in gothic literature of, you know, the beautiful blonde angel, young, innocent girl. And then the evil stepmother who's shagging in the woods, who then has to, she has to have a fall. She has to have her comeuppance. She has to be punished for her ways. So she has to be snogged in a scary, toothy way by Christopher Walken, who I think gets, he's like, one line is just a noise, he's just kind of like blah, and then just disappears into his tree. Have a lovely life with his new bride.
Great. Well, I think it's about time that we move on to talk about our second film. So let me tell you guys a little bit about Marrowbone, or sometimes called The Secret of Marrowbone. So this film came out in 2017, so it's not too old at all. It's written and directed by Sergio G. Sanchez, who is the guy that wrote The Orphanage and some other good films as well. It stars George MacKay, who was very famous very recently in the 1917 film. You got Anna Taylor-Joy and Mia Goth, who actually were both in Emma together recently as well. And then you've got Charlie Heaton, who is from Stranger Things. So you've got this cast of kind of these like quite young but very kind of successful and fantastic actors. And for a little bit of a synopsis, a young man and his three younger siblings, who have kept secret the death of their beloved mother in order to remain together, are plagued by a sinister presence in the sprawling manor in which they live. So, Lottie, tell us, what did you think of Marrowbone?
I am still thinking about this film. I still don't know if I've quite made up my mind on it. I thought it was a really good pick. It's like a lot of books I would read. I read a lot of spooky manor story type books. So yeah, I thought it was a really good choice. I did actually have a bit of a prediction after I'd sort of given my sort of preferences and my sort of thoughts about horror. I did have a bit of a prediction of what you guys would choose, and my crystal ball guess was Sleepy Hollow and The Orphanage. So it was quite interesting.
Oh my god. That's just amazing.
And this did remind me a lot of The Orphanage, which I have seen. And this is when I started to think, like, oh yeah, I've seen, oh, does that count as horror? Oh, and it kind of unlocked something, I think, for me. It was a really interesting film. At the start, I got the sense that we were almost in Edwardian times. The way they'd kind of designed it, the way the costume looked, it almost was as if we could have been at the start of The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, or The Durrells, or Five Children and It, or something like that. It felt kind of like this sort of very quintessentially little English family, and we've got a set, or even like Enid Blyton or something, we've got a sense that something mysterious or magical is going to happen to them. And we've got this sort of old house that's presented to us. I was very confused about why they were English and why they were in America. And I could tell from the credits that the team behind it was Spanish. And I think you could really tell. I think a lot of the dialogue didn't come across quite right. It's felt, some of it felt a little bit stilted. And I'm still confused as to why they decided this English family had to come to America for this story to happen, and that the haunted house interior was beautiful. It was, again, another really beautifully designed production, and the interiors were really beautiful, and the use of light and everything, it was really atmospheric. But I did think this really should be an English manor house, or just embrace it and just go make it in Spain, make it like The Orphanage, just make it a Spanish film, guys. There were a lot of choices that I was sort of unsure about.
It's true, it does feel like an English manor house America that is also in Spain.
It was all shot in Spain, so but I don't imagine that it is any reason more complex than they thought it would help them sell the film more. I expect, and you know, all you they wanted these these cast of
maybe
actors.
Yeah, the actors, yeah. Like there's a very distinctive, although split down,
they're actually, you know, actually all of the English speaking or the English accented characters are actually all British, so
yeah. But Thingy is American, is she not?
She is, yes. Yeah, so
I mean, maybe it was a way for them to all have their natural accents, or I don't know. I do think it, yeah, the location does, the more you think about it, which obviously, Lottie, I think you do when you watch these type of films, because that's your jam, you know, you like to go into the detail. I think the more you try and unpick that, the more it does feel a little bit confusing. Mm. But I think the beauty of this story is the entire otherworldly quality of the story of the family who are living there. They feel so separate and kind of far away in their own little world that to me it doesn't really matter where in the world that is. It just matters that they're kind of separate from everyone else. So that the feeling of that in this film is so strong, that they are literally kind of in the middle of nowhere, living in a slightly, in a strange way, in a strange place. So if anything, for me, I think it kind of adds to that atmosphere. Maybe
I think I really love a mystery, and that's why I really enjoyed this film in terms of the twists and turns that it takes. But I think because I love a mystery, and I read this kind of books that's sort of very similar, I'm always looking for clues and hints right from the start. And I think it really threw me that they were English and they're in America. I felt it was almost throwing me red herrings. I thought, am I meant to be really paying attention to this? Is there a reason that they're talking in this slightly stilted way? Is there a reason why Billy has a different accent to the rest of the family?
Yeah, they're all
sorry,
English.
Why are you from the Midlands? Every time you spoke, it was slightly different.
Yeah, it's funny because it did feel like someone who isn't British being like, they're all British, so it doesn't matter that half of one of them's from the Midlands and the rest of them are all speaking with like RP.
Well, it's fine. And they were being directed by a Spanish guy, so he probably didn't even notice.
Yeah. No.
But yeah, I think the fact that they're in the US, it doesn't bother me. And I think if anything, it helps add to the feeling of them feeling isolated and different from the people around them. And, you know, the fact that the costumes and that side of it kind of feel a bit slightly out as well, I think is intentional.
Yeah, I quite like that.
Further away.
Yeah, definitely. It did kind of add to that sort of feeling of there's something strange, there's something mysterious going on here. They've come from a different place and almost a different time. And they look very different to Ali when they first meet Ali, and you suddenly realise, hang on, this is not kind of a 1940s or Edwardian school story. You know, she's got a modern day sort of 60s, 50s, 60s, not quite sure where we are, but she's got a camera and you kind of start piecing it together. And yeah, I did enjoy that.
And we're back in New England again. So weirdly, we managed to both pick you two films set in pretty much the same place.
Yeah,
except it's Spain.
Except it's Spain.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's Spain. Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I love the opening of this film. I love the bit before we see that the mother's passed away, where she does this thing where she like draws the line. And she's like, we all step past this line, and we, you know, everything that's happened before is gone, and we're starting afresh. I just think that's a really like a really powerful way to start a film and kind of make you as an audience feel like you're like, okay, well, I'm just joining this story as well, so it's fine. I don't need to know what's happened before, but boy, do you.
But you want to. I think as soon as you see them going, we've changed our name and we're starting afresh and we're leaving everything behind that has happened before, you can't help it because you do want to go forward with them on this story, but you sit there and you go, well, what happened? Like, as soon as that happened, you're like, well, geez, what? Well, that's pretty extreme, isn't it? That's not just something that you do over a weekend. You know, it's like that's really intense. So what has happened? Mm. And that is there's that underlying kind of rumble that goes through this whole film when you just find out kind of bit by bit why they're there, why they're so separate from everybody.
Yeah, there's this real slow release of little bits of information, and there are some red herrings in there as well. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, Lottie, as someone who, like you said, likes this kind of story or this kind of way of telling a story, if you guessed the twist or if you were there at the moment when it happened, experiencing it in the moment.
They did it so well. And like you say, they sort of just drop this sort of trail of breadcrumbs and take you down. I watched it with my partner. We were all trying to come up with theories as it went along. I think because you are straight away, you've got this idea that they're leaving their old world behind. Someone's possibly after them. Something bad happened and they're making a clean break. We then have this kind of, the mum passes away. We then have this scary moment. There's someone in the woods and they're shooting towards the house. And then suddenly we're jumping forward in time and they're really locked down in this house. Odd watching it in lockdown when they're kind of really locked into the compound of this little estate that they're on with this manor house. And you're kind of being drip fed information, and I really did fall for a lot of those kind of wrong turns that are presented. And what I love is a film or a book where you're just a few seconds before the reveal, you're like, oh god, it's that, you know.
Yeah,
and that was definitely what I got with this film, was like just a few moments before each bit, it was like, oh god, I've got it. And just that moment when you realize with the sort of the big twist of the film, there was just this a few moments before I just kind of went, oh god. It's this thing. And I immediately felt like, oh, that's incredible plotting. But simultaneously, I feel really, really cheated now. I was simultaneously like, that's amazing. And I'm really angry.
I mean, for our listeners who may not have seen this film, there's an entire storyline about the children's father and about how he is a nasty piece of work who has murdered a few people, and the family basically escape him with all of his money, and they escape from England to America. And the whole story is that you think that these children have managed to kill their father and basically shut him in their attic until he died. And now he's just up in the attic. And there's all these underlying feelings of them being unlucky, of them being cursed, of them being haunted. There's this whole thing. There's a ghost in the house that's coming to hurt them because of the bad things that they've done. But the story basically culminates in the fact that their dad, who was locked in the attic, was locked in there by the eldest son because he managed to kill the other three siblings. And the person who's been living in this house is this boy who has now developed through this trauma, this multiple personality disorder, in which he still thinks that his siblings are with him. And they appeared in order to save him because he blames himself for the fact that they were killed. And also, like, their dad has managed to live for 6 years in the attic just by eating the occasional rat and also adorable raccoons, which was very upsetting.
Very upsetting.
When Scoundrel, the raccoon, who makes a couple of appearances, gets eaten by this guy living in the attic. So it's so weird. It does feel like it's a bit Turn of the Screw, and it's a bit Jane Eyre, and it's a bit this, and it's a bit that. It's definitely kind of picking and choosing from all of these very traditional gothic horror stories.
And it's incredibly cleverly done in the sense that you've got, you know, the eldest boy, who's actually the only person who's really there, and then these three younger siblings who he's trying to protect and pretend like their mother is still there so that they don't get separated and taken away from each other.
Yeah.
So they all have to stay in the house. They all have to stay isolated.
Yeah.
And obviously, really, there's no one there at all.
It's so upsetting when you realize that he's been spending the whole film thinking, I don't want them to be taken away from me. And the reality of that is that he basically knows what's going on with him in a subconscious way, because I think that his two siblings, his middle siblings, who are obviously just different facets of his personality, they are the ones that have the information, but they don't allow him to have it. It's very cleverly done, that I think, actually, that his sister is the one that basically tells his girlfriend what's happened, and she makes a decision separate from him, because in order for him to survive in the world, he has had to kind of close off that knowledge as to the fact that his brothers and sister are no longer there. And it's just, he's wanted them not to be taken away, insofar as if someone found out that they weren't there but he still talks to them, obviously they would try and treat him for it, which would then potentially mean that they've been taken away from him again. It's really sad.
You also have this incredible set piece of this giant mirror.
Oh.
And many other mirrors around the house that have all been covered or turned away.
Because of the ghost.
But all the way through the thing, you don't know why. You're like, they have this fear of mirrors and you never understand what it is. And then when you have this amazing kind of reveal, you learn that if he could see himself in the reflection, he wouldn't see his siblings because they're not really there. I think for me in this film, this is not, it does have some real scary bits. I think that the creepy kind of like hand reaching round is really like, that's like, that's your jump scares. But I think the horror in this is a much more psychological
slow burn.
Yeah, it's a real slow burn, but it's just, it's disturbing and it's upsetting kind of horror. It's not like blah or blood and gore. It's just the situation of it is so sad. And that's where the horror for me comes out in
it's
this.
It's very gentle horror, not in terms of the fact that it's not horrifying, because in some ways I think it is more so because of how gently it's dealt with. Because I know the first time that we watched this film, I was thinking about it probably for a good week or so afterwards and just thinking, oh, that means that this that they were referring to at the beginning of the film was a thing. And it just sat with me for a really long time. I know that there was the bit when I realized that the youngest boy, Sam, was most probably his sister's son rather than his youngest brother. And it took me a while to put those two things together. And it was just because at the beginning of the film, when the mother has died, she leaves behind a letter that says, you know, goodbye to all of my children. But then he says, you know, she will finally be a mother to Sam as she was always meant to be. And you kind of think that offhand, you're like, oh, because she was probably like, you know, so motherly to her youngest brother. But then when you find out about her dad more, you're like, oh, that's what happened. But that is never overtly talked about. And it's another, I think, really good representation of what abuse is like, because it's not used for titillation and it's not used for like a dramatic moment. It's just used for, this is something that happened. You know, and it adds to the story rather than being like, oh my God, let's watch this really horrible thing happen to a young girl. It's not about that. So I think it's handled really well. But little things like that only kind of sit with you, I think, a little bit after. And that's why I think we, you know, Emrys and I were discussing maybe why this film isn't as well known, because I do think it is a really interesting film. And considering that it comes from the guy who did The Orphanage, which was a pretty big deal, you'd think it would be better known than it is. But I think the reason that it isn't is that it doesn't kind of go out with all guns blazing. It's very subtle and gentle and delicate in how it deals with what is really difficult subject matter when you really dig into it.
Yeah, I think The Orphanage was much more heavy-handed in the kind of paranormal part of it, whereas this, like you say, it was more of a kind of creeping, kind of slow, but really kind of, you had this constant sense of unease and that something very dark is going on, and we've got this stain on the ceiling that is kind of hanging over them at all times, and the mirrors being covered up, and you just, and I think for me, Sam, the little boy, was so cute and so adorable. Oh, I was like, something terrible's going to happen to him because he's so sweet. And there's this awful point where he's in his mother's room and he pulls down the sheet off a mirror and you kind of get what he thinks he's seeing in the mirror. Oh, that really, and for me, that was a really big kind of jump moment. But it did feel kind of by the end that we've just kind of, we almost had this moment about kind of standing up to your abuser, and that was more what it was about. And I guess that is a harder film to kind of market in a way. Like, it's really quite hard. Where do you position it? Like we're saying, it's kind of psychological, thrillery, horror, but it kind of slips between the genres quite a lot. But I just thought that George Mackey did an incredible job. I did think he kind of carried this film.
Oh God, yeah.
And yeah, what a hard job he had, especially at the end with this reveal where he's having to kind of inhabit each of the characters of his siblings. And yeah, I was really impressed by him. And I've just seen him in dysfunctional family films. I'd seen him in Captain Fantastic not that long ago. He always ends up with weird siblings, this one. And yeah, I was just, really impressed. He was just very strong. And I think, had he not been cast in it, I don't know if it would have been as successful, almost for me.
The part where you see him in the fortress, where he is doing all of the different voices and he's moving around to be like, I'm now this sibling, I'm now this sibling, and doing the different voices. That's so hard to watch.
It's really hard to watch.
It could be so clunky though. Do you know what I mean? Like, it could be. And also, it's interesting what you were saying, Lottie, about kind of being simultaneously like elated and also incredibly disappointed, like at this reveal, because you're like, I've been invested in these characters, because the acting of these other siblings is just amazing. I love them. I think that they are perfect. Each one of them is perfect in the character that they play. And so, you know, like you were saying about little Sam is so gorgeous and so sweet. The fact of the matter is, he's not been there for the whole film, and that is so gutting to watch. And I think that seeing an actor suddenly being like, now I'm gonna be Jane, now I'm gonna be Sam, now I'm gonna, it could be so messy, and it could basically ruin a film, or it could kind of look just a bit gimmicky. But the way that George Mackey like does it is, again, it's gentle and it's subtle, it's not overplayed. And I think, to be perfectly honest, this is the first time that I've seen like multiple personality disorder portrayed in a film where it hasn't been gimmicky or clunky or overdramatic. And let's you know, portray mental illness as being an excuse to go over the top, naming no names, Split.
Which Anna Taylor-Joy is also in.
You know, it's I think, for that and for how it deals with so many big issues, I do think it's incredibly well done.
It's one of those films, I think, that actually watching it a second time just gives you a whole different film to watch, because you already know what's going
to
happen at that
point. I'd really like to watch it again, because I think there's so many bits where you kind of look back on it and go, but that didn't happen. We get so much of insight into his siblings when he's not there, and what they're up to when he's not there. And I'd really like to kind of rewatch it and kind of see what I missed almost, and kind of see how that's kind of, the ideas being built up. And yeah, there was a bit of a, and it was all a dream vibe when that reveal kind of happens. And I think they did pull it back by how kind of sensitively they then deal with him and the trauma that he's gone through. And I think that did save it. I was quite disappointed in that Ali's character and the lawyer, who is Francis from Poldark, but I can't remember the
The character's name is Porter, and he's a right asshole.
Oh my God,
but they are very, Ali and Porter are very two-dimensional, and they're very much just there to serve the story. So I did want a bit more character. And I don't know if that was intentional. I don't know if they just wanted to give us more kind of three-dimensional characters for those characters who weren't actually really there at the time.
Yeah, it's almost like they're more real than the real people.
Yeah, than the real people.
It's when Ali says to the dad in the attic, "You're the one that's dead." Is like, yeah, these people, they are real and they are here and they are breathing. They may not exist in the world anymore, but they are so real in his memories of them. That's interesting, actually. I hadn't thought about that, but that is so true. Like, the characters that you grow to love and understand the most in this film are characters that aren't even actually there.
They're not actually there. And I think that's almost why you get more of a kind of shock in that moment, because they're the ones you're so invested in, and they're the ones you want to protect, and they're the ones that are like, you've got to get there, they're in trouble, you've got to save them. And he could never save them, because it wasn't happening, and it's so heartbreaking. And yeah, the more I think about it, the more I kind of see that they were really clever to very much make us, we're seeing it all from Jack's point of view. We're very much with him, and we're seeing what he wants us to see, and we're seeing what he's seeing. So when that's all stripped away from us, we get quite angry and we get quite upset in that moment when that happens, because we are very much, for the main proportion of this film, we're seeing it as he's seeing it. So yeah, it's one that's really kind of grown on me, and that I've really had kind of buzzing around in my head. It's a bit of a thinker, and I definitely would like to rewatch it, because you do kind of get two films for the price of one. If you go back and rewatch it, you've got a whole different perspective on it.
I'm curious to hear what you think about the end of this film. There's definitely, it feels almost like a bit of a kind of statement or a comment about mental health, which is something that has always been a big issue, but it feels like as we go further on, feels like it becomes bigger and more important. So you have this bit where Ali is speaking to this doctor who's and they're going, great, they have, he's been taking his medication and he hasn't seen them this whole time, and the doctor's really challenging her and saying, like, are you sure you want to stay with this guy? Like, it's gonna mess up your life. And then we see that she's just putting these full bottles of pills into a cupboard and he's not been taking them. And she actually says, what does she say? She says, I'm gonna go away.
I'll go inside until they come back.
Yeah. And then you have this reveal of the siblings there
in the field,
yeah,
coming towards them, because she wanted him to be able to keep them with him.
I felt like I didn't need that. I felt like I wanted it to end before we saw this almost little happy ever after moment. I wanted to know that she was kind of going to be there for him, but I felt like we didn't need to see this whole kind of, and this is exactly where we left them, and this is kind of how they dealt with it, and they did go to the doctor, and okay, but then they didn't listen to the doctor anyway, so why did they go to the doctor? I don't think it's particularly helpful to say that if you've gone through extreme trauma, maybe don't take your medicine and don't listen to medical advice, although this is presumably set a long time ago. Yeah, I felt I didn't need it. I think they wanted that kind of emotional little teary ending where we kind of see them in this sort of field of gold and it's all very lovely. They're still there. Don't worry, everyone. You love those characters and we're kind of not done away with them. But I almost felt like that kind of softened it, and I almost wanted it to be tougher. I almost wanted it to be like, and we found out and now they've kind of gone. How is he going to process it and kind of leave us to fill in that blank and leave us to kind of use our own imaginations with that a bit? Yeah, I felt like I didn't need that. And I also didn't quite understand. I don't think they'd built up the relationship enough for us to be that invested in the fact that Ali would give up her entire life to live in this spooky house. Why would you still live there? Terrible things have happened there. It's this awful house of murder. I mean, it's just I didn't need it, and I thought, move.
Yeah.
Move from that
house. Don't just keep painting over that spot that on the ceiling.
I love that one of the bits of the music that they play when they're in there is the Beach Boys. Wouldn't it be nice if we were older? Then nice. We wouldn't have to wait so long. Oh. And it's just so bittersweet.
Oh, it's so God. I need to watch it again. Definitely. It's just really just so brutal. So brutal.
Going back to the ending very quickly, firstly, I've suddenly thought The Orphanage has a very similar ending to this. I think upon watching The Orphanage, I remember thinking, God, I wish he'd just finished that about 10 minutes, you know, earlier, and it didn't have this, oh, and everyone's happy. I wanted it to feel more bleak. And I do think there is a part of me that wanted this to feel more bleak. And a part of me wonders maybe the writer just doesn't like endings like that. And he has to kind of tie up loose ends in order to feel satisfied. But I do totally get where you're coming from, Lottie, because I do feel that somewhat as well, that I want it to kind of just, that just be the end rather than it being, and now everyone's happy. But I do like the idea, you know, in the, I do think it feels 60s-esque or something, this film, in terms of, you know, I don't really know, but it's got the Beach Boys in it. I hadn't even thought about that. Oh my God, there's the Beach Boys in this. It's not set in like Victorian Edwardian England, but there's this idea of anyone who has mental health issues needs to be fixed. In particular, take this medication and all the bad things will go away. And it doesn't matter if you have no quality of life because you're so doped up on whatever this is, like antipsychotic medication or whatever it is that they've prescribed to him, because, you know, you need to be fixed. And I think the modern look on mental health is, if it's a problem for you, then we can help you deal with it. But just because you yourself are suffering from, you know, mental illness or that you have issues with your mental health doesn't necessarily mean that you're a problem that needs to be fixed. And I think that I really enjoy that perspective in this film, because it isn't, you don't see that very often in big budget movies. You know, you often see people, it's the same as when we watch The Babadook. Mm. That was very much about dealing with depression, in particular kind of postnatal depression and depression around trauma and loss of a loved one. But it's the similar kind of thing, that you yourself are the person who has to live with the issue that you have, and it is down to you as to how you treat it. It's not up to someone to come up to you and be like, you're broken and I need to fix you. And I really like that. So in a way, I think that kind of redeems the slightly airy-fairy ending.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way of looking. That hadn't really occurred to me, to be honest. Actually, yeah, you're completely right that it's not hurting him if he's happy that he can see his siblings, but he kind of acknowledges that what has happened, and he's not sort of harming himself in any way. He's, you know, he's quite happy with that, and it's just, yeah, what he wants, and kind of, yeah, freeing him from the system a little bit, in that, you know, yeah, like you say, the doctor just wants to kind of fix him and make him normal in inverted commas, and actually that doesn't need to happen.
Yeah, through the whole film he's scared of someone coming and taking his siblings away, and he doesn't want that. So that would almost feel like the wrong
way to do it.
The whole story is about people running away from something and hiding from something. Mm. And the end of this is, I'm not running away anymore. Mm. And I'm not hiding from anything. Okay, Lottie, so we've come to the point in the podcast where we're going to explain why we chose these films for you, and Katie is going to go first.
So Lottie, I found your questionnaire really interesting, because I always love it when someone comes on the podcast and they say that they don't really like horror films, because it's like a bit more of a challenge. If someone's just like, I love everything, then you're like, oh man, I don't know kind of which way to go into this for you. But with you, I think pretty much straight away, I was like, I really know where I want to go with horror, because I know that you said that you really didn't like gross out violent horror. So I thought, okay, I'm gonna pull out a bit of the gothic horror again, which is where I do go to with people who are less inclined to enjoy gross bloody violence like I usually do. And I thought, yeah, this is where I'm gonna go. And I wanted to pick something that was, I almost think of it as horror light. So it's got all of the elements of a horror film. It's got your headless horseman, your ghosties, your ghoulies, your blood, your black and white palette. But in the way that it deals with it, it's more delicate in terms of how it talks you through things. Yes, there are a couple of jump scares and bits and pieces, but it's more like you're living in the world of gothic horror then you're watching a full-out horror film. And I know that you are someone who thinks a lot about aesthetics and how things are styled and the visual impacts of things. And I thought, if I was going to give you a film that kind of tied all of those things in together without scaring the living bejesus out of you, because I want you to come back to horror. I want you to think, oh, this is like my little way in. And because this film for me was definitely really, really iconic for me in growing up as being one of the things that made me then want to get into different kinds of horror films, I thought with all of those things combined, that's why I had to pick Sleepy Hollow for you.
Interesting.
And Lottie, I chose Marrowbone for you. We've chosen a lot of films for people, and we tend to find that when you choose a film that the person hasn't seen, it's a more enjoyable experience for everyone, especially if it's someone, like Katie has said, like yourself, that's maybe kind of like, don't really think I like this. I'm prepared to like open up myself a little bit. So open up yourself something different, something new. So I'm so glad that you hadn't seen this and was kind of banking on that. I wanted to give you something that was gothic horror. You talked about your love of that. But this is kind of a relatively new gothic horror and not something that's set in a kind of gothic time period. It's more gothic horror in its style than in its setting necessarily. You talked about how you love kind of narrative drama driven stories, and this is a perfect example of that. It's really gripping. It's a mystery as well as a horror. You talked about how you want something that has really great characters in it. This has some really great characters in it. It's a really small cast, and even though they're not even real, they're still really good. I wanted to give you something that would scare you a little bit, but not in the ways that you kind of maybe imagine horror to be, in the sense that it's like bloody and disgusting and gory and jumpy. I wanted to scare you in a different way. You also talked about some of your fears, and this hit on two key ones for me. One was ghosts, and the other one was a fear of loved ones dying, which is really where the horror in this comes from me. So I wanted to give you something that would show you that you do like horror. Maybe not all of it, but some of it you really do enjoy. And that's why I chose Marrowbone for you.
Amazing. Do I need to now pass judgment and give you my thoughts on all of that?
You look like you really want to, so let's get straight to it. The first question is, which of these films scared you the most?
I feel like Marrowbone scared me the most because I hadn't seen it before, and all of the jump moments, and there were quite a lot, especially for someone like me, because I jump pretty easy. There was this moment with a hand, there was moments with mirrors, there were moments with sort of figures that are appearing, and what is that, and I can't quite see it, and yeah, it really did make me jump.
Woo!
Yeah, I'm not surprised, because although I did find Sleepy Hollow terrifying when I was about 15, I watched it, when we rewatched it, I just sat there and I sort of thought to myself, oh, this is just a bit of a romp, isn't it? It's not really scary at all. It's just a bit of a romp.
And our second question for you is, and the big question, which of these two films was the best curated horror pick for you?
This is really hard because I think you guys did an incredible job. And yeah, I found it really hard to choose. And I think you really thought really carefully about not sort of easing me in and not giving me those really big scary moments and picking qualities of other films and other kind of culture that I like. But ultimately, it has to be a Sleepy Hollow. I love it. I love a romp. It's got all the people in it ever, all the greats of kind of British action challenge. And it's just hilarious and a bit scary. And it's just the ultimate gothic everything. It's just this gothic soup of all the things.
Ooh, gothic soup. I think gothic soup. Yes.
It's a bit of tasty. It wouldn't be tasty, would it? Gothic soup. It'd be horrible. But yes, I just loved it. And it was a real brilliant, fun walk down memory lane in a way. Like there's just this, it also reminds you of a time when you first watched it. It's got this nostalgic quality to it. It is sort of late 90s, early noughties does the past, which is just excellent. And it just reminded me of being at sleepovers like having a really silly time, probably high on Sprite and Tango and eating Doritos and just like, I don't know, it just put me back to like a really silly time.
Nostalgic horror is sometimes the best horror.
For sure.
You know, we've talked about this a lot before, about the things that scared you when you were younger, or the things that you saw when you were slightly more impressionable are the things that stick with you, and revisiting those can either be incredibly cathartic or it can just be a jolly good romp like this one.
Such a romp.
That is definitely the word of the episode.
Romp.
Had a great romp. I kind of just had forgotten that this falls into the category of horror. Like, neither of these films would I have thought, oh, that's a horror film. And yeah, I'm hoping that they will both be kind of gateway drugs into the world of horror, because I'm such an idiot. Like, I have actually been to Romania, to the Carpathian Mountains, to the castle, which is what the castle in Dracula is based on, because of reading Dracula. But I kind of just forgot that Gothic is part of horror. And I think I just have these sort of Hammer horror ideas and the thoughts of all this gore and everything else, and just really forgot that an amazing ghost story and a Gothic mystery and all of that clever psychological scares comes under this umbrella.
The best kind of horror, as far as I'm concerned, it's the horror that I love more than any other kind of horror. Much as I enjoy things, you know, I'm not gonna lie, I love things where there's lots of bloody violence and gore. That's really my jam, but my heart is with Gothic horror and always will be.
Maybe I'll gradually get to the gore one day. Tiny tiny steps.
Baby steps. We'll start with a romp and we'll go from there.
But sadly, we have come to the end, so all we have left to do is say a massive thank you to Lottie. Thank you so much.
Thank you so, so much, Lottie. Thank you. It's been an absolute joy.
I had a great time. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you for joining us on the Curators of Horror.
You can follow us on the gram at Curators of Horror, or you can send us an electronic mail at curatorsofhorror@gmail.com.
We'd love to hear from you and what you thought of Sleepy Hollow and Marrowbone. Which did you think was the best movie?
Are there any other horror movies that you'd like to recommend for our guest Lottie?
We'll be back next week to reveal our next curations, and in 2 weeks with our next main episode.
We really hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, rate, review us, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
And if you didn't, I can recommend some lovely light operetta. Something was opposite to horror. Oh.
Thank you, Lottie.
Thank you, Lottie.
Thanks.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you, Emrys.
Thanks for listening, and we hope you have a horrifying week. Whoa.